I've always been told that there's a gap in distance goes swimming, and I think me, Emily, and Amber, and the rest of us are just really trying to fill that gap because we know that we're good enough. We know that we trained so hard, and we know that hitting those times is definitely something in our reach.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. Me and Dan are back after a nice little rest over the Christmas period. Of course, we both managed to get ill. That is just the way it goes. But we are back with a fantastic episode of the podcast this week. As you've just heard, we take a deep dive into distance swimming with Fleur Lewis.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm still a little bit nasally now, so I do apologise if you can hear that through your headphones or wherever you're watching and listening to this. I hope everyone's had a great Christmas and New Year's. We're back, like Scott said, after a little break, and we're ready for what 2024 has in store. We're starting the year off with a bang, as we've got Fleur on to talk about distance swimming, the Andy Manley squad, and her preparations as we head towards British Olympic Trials, which is at the start of April.
Yes, we did promise at the end of last year that our episodes leading into trials are going to be good. And we've already lined up, I can tell you, four amazing guests that are certainly going to be making waves at trials. Fleur is the first one of those. She set the British record in the 1500 meters short course at Bucks like 2 months ago, a month ago now.
November.
We've been trying to get her on because we really want to discuss certainly the progress of women's distance swimming in Britain because it is moving.
It's getting there.
So please welcome onto this week's podcast, Fleur Lewis. Fleur, thank you for joining us on the podcast this week. Our first podcast back from Christmas and New Year. How was your New Year? How did you spend?
So straight off the bat after winters, we came back and we had one more week here at Loughborough. And it was a really tough week. We did 90K that week. So it was 11 sessions and it was very hard to get through knowing that Christmas is right around the corner. So it was really tough mentally and physically, but we all kind of got through it together as a team and it was really good. And then I had a few days, I trained the 23rd, then had the 24th, 25th off and 26th off. And then in between Christmas and New Year's, I trained at my home club, Barnet Copdall. And their Christmas training is they train once a day, but it's 3 hours long and it's normally in between 10 and 11K. And they kind of alternate each session between like A2 work. So that's like quite below heart rate, like a low heart rate. And it's just sometimes I'll be kicking there or I am in there. And then the next day would be threshold. So it's a lot harder the next day. So we kind of use the other day as recovery. So, but that was good. And it was nice to be at my home club again because I haven't seen them in a while. And then I'm back here now.
So when you go back for Christmas then, it's not like Andy's or your coach Andy Manley, we'll get into him a little bit later on, is sending you away with big sessions that you've got to go do by yourself. He trusts you to...
Yeah.
Or you trust your home club, essentially, to give you the sessions that you need.
Yeah, so I spoke to him before I left and I told him the type of training that we do. And he said that it was good. And he kind of said to just kind of relax over Christmas. He said that it's very important to have a mental break from swimming because especially the season coming up is going to be so huge. And it's going to, we're going to have to really put our head down for it. So I think he was happy with only doing four sessions over Christmas because he knows that they're 10 and 11K. So it's not like I'm doing nothing.
And I was going to say, that's quite a lot.
Yeah. So, he was happy with what I was doing because, he knows, he trusts that I'll do everything I need. I went to the gym and I just kind of maintained my fitness throughout the holiday.
Yeah, that's the thing. Being a distance swimmer, I assume you can't have too many days off because then you lose so much fitness and momentum, I suppose. But you had a solid 3 days off. And do you feel now refreshed because of those 3 days?
Kind of. It's annoying because you want those 3 days off, but it is quite tough getting straight into it. So the first training session back was quite tough just trying to get into that rhythm again because just even having a day off can change the way I swim the next day because we're very because we do so much volume, having even just a day off can really alter the way I train the next day. So
yeah.
It's annoying.
So week to week then, are you not having a session off in the week? Are you every day in the pool?
So at the moment, recently, he's got me in 11 sessions a week. So I'll be training twice a day, Monday to Friday, and then Saturday morning. So then I kind of do get the afternoon on Saturday off and Sunday off. And then Monday morning is always a bit stiff. Like I always say to Andy, I'm struggling a little bit just because I've had that day off. But I will definitely not swim on a Sunday because I need my rest.
Yeah.
You
need it. Yeah.
You just got to really power through the Monday morning and then the rest of the week. It gets harder because the sessions are harder, but it gets easier in the sense that you feel more yourself in the water.
So when you say it gets harder, is that in terms of volume? So is the meterage going to be increased even further than what it was at the 90K week? So you're going to end up hissing maybe 100? Is that what you're kind of saying?
I meant like the Monday morning is always, he kind of knows that we're a bit stiff. So the session is
okay.
A bit more, not really laid back, but just like he knows that you're going to be stiff and not feeling the best. But then like we get straight into a hard set Monday night again. And then that kind of gets the ball rolling for the rest of the week.
Wow. And what kind of sessions would those entail? Those hard ones?
Just lots of thresholds, to be honest. Unfortunately, I swim best with loads of meters and lots of threshold. I think I've discussed with Andy that just as many meters as I can manage with the amount of threshold is best for my swimming. So we'd kind of, towards races, we'd do maybe a bit more race-paced work. But like when we're with the bulk of the season, it's normally threshold type work.
Okay, so looking forward then to the next month or so, I know like winter months as any swimmer is tough. It's not fun. Yeah. So what's the outlook for a distance swimmer in the winter months?
So I actually think the winter months for distance swimmers is we always have to do lots of meters. I feel like it never really comes down even in the summer. Like for the big meets in the summer, I'd never really taper either because the more I taper, the worse I swim. Mm. So I need to keep the meters up. So kind of throughout the whole year, it's big meters. It's always ranges between 80-90K a week. Yeah. So then it's just more of the fact it's dark and it's cold, which makes it harder through these winter months. And because like the big competitions are kind of far away, but not that far.
Mm.
It's like it's hard to keep that motivation, but then the closer we get to it, the more motivated you feel, and it gets better when the warmer weather comes around.
And how do you get through those harder periods? Let's say it obviously it's cold now, it's dark outside. Mm. How do you get through that and motivate and drive yourself through to get up every morning, well, five mornings, six mornings every week? How do you do that?
Well, I think it's more, I tend to find that the more I overthink about it, the worse it gets. So I really just try to take one day at a time. So I'm like, okay, well, if I can just get up for this training and go to it, then it's good. And then when I'm in the water, I'm like, okay, well, if I can just push myself now. So I take it very, very small at a time. Just
moment
so I can...
by moment almost.
Yeah, literally. Mm. Because if I overthink it and I'm like, oh, I've got such a big week, I've got so many sessions, like this month is going to be so long, then I find it so much harder to get through the month. So if I just don't think about later on, I just think about now and what I'm doing now, I find it so much easier to get through it.
Mm.
Yeah, like I'd spiral straight away if someone says, 90K a week. Yeah. Nope, I'm out, I'm done. Yeah. how great is it to have like the squad dynamic that you've got going on at Loughborough? I know we've spoken on this podcast so many times, we've spoken to a fair few of them before, but it's a heck of a good squad that's going on there with Dan Whiffen breaking world records. You got Hector Pardo who's doing things in open water, Toby Robinson. The list is endless. How great is it to have those guys around you, and how important is it to actually to let you succeeding in your training, let alone your racing?
Yeah, it's honestly, I feel so privileged just to be in the squad. To be honest, I think I used to always see like Olympians and world record holders as like these superheroes. Like when you're younger, I feel like everyone does that. So then to be training with these Olympians and world record holders, it's like, it doesn't even feel real because you know them, like they're your friends. It's quite insane that those are the people that are breaking these world records. And But no, I do love our squad. It's like we all train really hard. We all really push each other throughout the training sessions. And the older ones, like Dan, he would help me through a session. So sometimes he'd be like, come on, Flo, you can go faster than that. Or they help with technique and say, oh, maybe you shouldn't do that with your catch or something like that. So they do really help me throughout all the sessions. And I think it's just such a good dynamic that we have in our squad.
What was it like when Dan did break that world record? What was the squad like? Was it just literally
it was insane.
Mad? Yeah.
Unfortunately, we weren't swimming at the time that he was racing, because when they were at Europeans, a lot of the time when they were racing, we'd be swimming. So we would get out and we'd watch them swim and we'd cheer them on. But we weren't all together when we watched the world record. But it was insane. The next morning when he came up swimming, everyone was like, did you see Dan? It was insane. And seeing everyone post about him, and just we're all so happy for him because we know how hard he trains. So it was really good.
It's a big confidence builder, I'm sure, for the squad as well, that you're all heading in that same direction. We've spoken about him a few times already, skirted around it, but Andy Manley, he's doing a fantastic job with the squad. He was actually the conversation we had with him, I think it was 12 months ago to the day. It was the first episode of 2023 was our most listened to episode last year. Everyone wants to know what he's doing there. So is there anything specific he's doing to bring the best out of you, yourself, in your swimming?
I think he's very invested in his swimmers. I think he puts a lot of time in each individual swimmer, and he knows that we're all different. So for example, this morning we had four different sets going on. Because even though we're all distance swimmers, we're all different with how we train. Or there's 1500 swimmers, or there's 400 swimmers, or there's open water swimmers. So it really specializes, especially in key sets, the type of work we should be doing. And I think he's really on it, and he knows what he's doing. And I think we all trust in him, and we just kind of get on with it because we know that he's giving us the best that we need to do.
Yeah, I think that's one of my questions, was that you have your 1500 swimmers, but then you go all the way up to 10K, and then they've got to do sighting, I assume. I'm not an open water specialist at all, but they do specific stuff like that. So I assume you all come together on, let's say, your A2 sessions, but when it's the key sessions, you then split apart. Is that right?
Yeah. So the open water group this morning would do more long reps. So they'll do 1,000s or 2,000s, whereas I train a lot with Lucy Hanquit, who's also a 1500 swimmer who you may have seen at Bucks. Yep. And we do a lot more threshold work, whereas the 400 swimmers would do more race pace work to really help get in the gears that they need to push for the 400 and the 200. So it is really good.
Is it important for you to have Lucy doing that set with you, having someone opposite? You could be in this squad with amazing swimmers, but actually if you're going up and down completely by yourself, I can imagine it can get quite lonely.
Yeah, it definitely can. If Lucy's away on camps or competitions, it does get quite hard to push yourself, because me and Lucy have really similar training times, and we're both really competitive, so we really push each other in training because neither of us want to lose. So sometimes Andy would put us head to head and be like, okay, you should really push each other in this set, which we do. So it is, I'm really grateful to have her on our squad, because we do really push each other, and I definitely wouldn't have got the times I've got if it wasn't for her.
Yeah, how does Andy make it sort of interesting? Because to me, if I'm being told I'm doing 90K this week, I'm just imagining that I'm just going bombing up and down, up and down, up and down. It's quite, I'd imagine that could be quite tedious. How does he make it sort of exciting, or, encourage you to do it all of the time?
Well, it can only get so exciting, I think. A lot of sessions are quite boring because you are swimming up and down, but he never gives us the same session twice. We've always got different sessions, different warm-ups. So it's interesting in that sense that we're never doing it again. The only sets we do again, if they're kind of test sets,
yeah.
We've improved.
Yeah.
But other than that, they're always different. And sometimes it would be kick, sometimes it would be some fly would be put in there and stuff like that. So I think he's quite good at hiding meters. Sometimes it would be oh, we've done 8K already. But sometimes it's oh, we've only done 4. So it kind of alternates.
They're the hard days, yeah.
I'm glad you're honest there and just say, look, it can get boring. Meters are meters.
It's grueling, I imagine. Just such hard work.
Yeah, there's no beating around the bush for that. Like, it can never be not boring swimming 90k a week.
Does a lot of backstroke have to be involved as well? Because if you're doing freestyle the whole time, the repetitive movement must give you shoulder issues. Does you have to do backstroke and a lot of resistance bands, pre-pull, stuff like that?
Yeah, we do. I had a shoulder injury like during the summer. Mm. So I'd focus a lot on resistance band before the training session. So for pre-pull, it's really important for all of us who all see us doing with banded work because we know how much stress is, will be on our shoulder.
Mm.
So we kind of only do backstroke for recovery. So if we do a really long, like a 10K session, we'll do maybe 200 back at the end, even though it's not that much, but it really help our shoulder.
So this feels like a tiny recovery for it.
Yeah.
Smallest one, yeah.
Well, I think a lot of our turnaround times are quite fast.
Yeah.
So if it is like a recovery, it's like, oh, I've got to do freestyle just to make it the turnaround.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, blimey. let's talk about your performances in the pool then, because you've started this season pretty well, we would say. Mm. So at Bucks, you hit the short course record. Was that expected going into Bucks? Was it a big target?
I kind of had my eye on it since last year when we did short course last year, because my short course times improved so much last year, and I kind of knew if I kept doing what I was doing in the pool, that British record was definitely something I could achieve. And we came straight back from altitude, so I knew I was really fit. I was probably the fittest I've ever been. And I just kind of went in there with confidence. And to be honest, when I was swimming, I had no idea how fast or slow I was going. I couldn't tell you. It didn't. I was thinking this could either be really slow or really fast. And when I saw the wall, when I saw the time, it was a really good feeling. It was definitely, I just felt like, oh, finally my work has paid off. Like, I really deserve this. And I'm so happy that it's come out on my races.
I imagine the confidence because of that is now sort of fueling you ready for Edinburgh International, and then obviously Champs leading up as well. Does Andy take short course very seriously? Because obviously you've got that British record, Dan's just broken the world record. Is there a reason why he targets the short course season so hard?
Well, we actually don't target it at all, really. It's,
do not? All right.
I think the reason why we swim well is because straight off the bat after summer we get straight into work. Like, we don't really mess about, we just get straight into it. It's really hard from the get-go, and then I think from the summer until then we've improved already so much because of how much work we're doing. So getting in the short course is just, I think the reason why we're so mad is because we're having fun. We know that I feel like short course is a bit of less pressure because it's not the Olympics. And we kind of just have fun with it. And I think it really helps because we're all swimming really well. Because like for winters and for Bucks, we all kind of swam through that. So we weren't even rested for it. And then Europeans, I don't think Dan was even that rested either. And he somehow got the world record.
That's mad.
Okay.
Wow.
So I think we just kind of pushed through this season for the long course season.
Can imagine long courses are much better feeling as a distance swimmer because you're not spending half your life spinning around. Like
I quite like short courses. It feels more like the walls. Sprint. Yeah.
God, I'd get dizzy.
It feels more like a sprint when you're going for like 16 minutes.
Well, my turns are awful. I don't know how I managed to get the record for the short course, but I think it's just you take each length individually, so you push off, you're like, okay, this length and then this length, and then it goes by faster if you think it like that.
Okay, I've got you. So you're like more engaged for a shorter period of time but more times.
I got you.
Kind of a side note, Bucks as a whole, like you you ended up breaking British record there. I think Dan Whiffen had broken the Bucks record when he was there. Should these meets, like these university meets, be bigger? Like, I know Loughborough, the university you're at, just dominates. But as a whole, like the amount of swimmers that are at universities, the amount of competitive races where you're there, to me it feels like this actually should be a major meet on the swimming calendar because you guys are having to swim fast for scholarships and the point in the season when the racing is. Like, it's a real shame for me when I go to this meet and there's not any fans in the stand whatsoever, really. It's just university students. But for me, it's such a big meet. It should be a big meet.
Yeah, I agree. I think Bucks is so fun. I really enjoy Bucks. And I think the reason why people swim well is because people are excited to be there. It's like the atmosphere is really good. Everyone's really cheering for their team, like, all the time. Like, the stands are so loud, like, louder than nationals.
Yep. Oh, yeah, so by a mile.
Definitely.
By so much. And everyone really wants everyone to do well. And when people do well, like, the atmosphere is even better. And I think, like, more people should come watch it, because that's really what swimming is. Like, it's fun and it's so exciting to watch. So I definitely think it should be bigger.
I think where it's positioned in the calendar, February, especially long course, February, is it the perfect month to trial stuff out, or like a last minute sort of tester to see how you are ready for champs, which is usually start of April. So you've got like 6 weeks or so, maybe even less than that, sorry. Yeah, no, 6 weeks to try things out. And I think that's usually, I don't know why people don't target that, like, Bucks more than they do, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think Bucks has always been one of my favourite meets because of swimming well, and because everyone there is just having fun. And I think it is a really good opportunity to try other things, because if you swim well, that's really good. But if you don't, it's also not the end of the world. But
you've got time, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a really good meet to just try things and see your friends and have fun.
Yeah.
So let's start looking ahead towards later on in the year after Bucks, with trials coming up. You say you're from London. How great is it to be back racing, or for champs to actually be back racing at the London Aquatic Centre?
Yeah, I'm really excited. I think the London Aquatic Centre is a really good pool. I used to do my regionals and counties there, so I kind of see the pool not as big as everyone else would, I did smaller events there. But I think that will also help take the pressure down a little bit, because I'm familiar with the pool. I know what's around it. I know point A to B, and I think it's going to be really good. I'm excited for it.
So what's the mindset going into trials? Is it to hit the nomination time, or is it just to race the race?
Both, to be honest. I think me and Andy are really working hard on to getting that Olympic qualifying time. It's definitely something I really want to achieve this year. And also racing, I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be very nerve-wracking, I think. But I'm really excited for it, and I think, like, having Emily and Amber in that race, I think it's going to be an exciting race, I think.
Yeah, it's really good that suddenly, 12 months out from the Olympics, that we've suddenly got these distance girls coming through to, like, push each other as well. I know there's Leah Crisp as well, who's, again, focusing a little bit more on open water like Amber. But to actually have a competition, like, you've gonna have to race fast against each other, almost takes the nomination time out of your hands when you're in the pool.
Yeah, definitely. I think I've always been told that there's a gap in distance girls swimming, and I think me, Emily and Amber and the rest of us are just really trying to fill that gap, because we know that we're good enough, we know that we trained so hard, and we know that hitting those times is definitely something in our reach.
Yeah.
And we also know that, like, British swimming, I feel like, don't pay that much attention to it. And I think having us three in the race is going to be, like, really exciting, and hopefully get more interest in the race.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, distance swimming has always had that kind of nagging reputation just globally that, it's a bit boring, but it's not.
It's
like,
changed.
The men's distance side is as exciting as it's ever going to be.
Definitely.
And then, like you say, you three girls at trials, that's the race I've got circled, because I want to see the head-to-head with that. Obviously, Amelie's going in as... she's champion from British last year, wasn't she?
Yeah.
So, which is nuts for someone so young. Yeah. So, like, already there's so much highlighted on it. And then the nomination time, I feel like it's within reach. Like, I know you've all got a drop time to get there, but the progress has been massive over the last 12 months for British distance swimming in this country. And it almost feels like, I don't know, the timing's been perfect from everyone moving on to that race.
Yeah, definitely. I think Emily's such a fantastic swimmer, and because she's so young, it's quite scary, because it's like, whoa, this girl is insane. But it's really good, because we really push each other on, even if we're not racing each other. Like, we'll see a time that she does, or she'll see a time that I do, and we'll be like, okay, I want to beat that next time. And, like, the times are just going down every time we swim. And I think by the time it hits April, I think we both got a really good chance seeing that time.
Yeah, I think it was you three girls. There was a stat, and I think Paul Boy did it, and you three girls are in the top five.
Yeah.
Literally in the last 15, like, couple of months. Short course 15, I think it was, which is such a good sign of things to come. And that race, like Scott said, we've got that race circled, and it should be a good old showdown. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, same. I'm looking forward to it. I think I'm a bit nervous for it, but I'm also really excited. I'm really excited to show everyone like what I've been training for and how well I'm going to swim.
What do you do between now and then, other than taking it moment by moment, to take your mind away from the nerves leading into trials? What's the strategy?
I think if I just don't really think about it, or think about it as just a goal. So if I'm training, I'm like, okay, I'm going to push myself so it's easier to get the time then. Mm. So the harder I train, the more relaxed I feel, because I know I'm doing everything I can to get the time, and I know I'm pushing myself towards that time. And hopefully I'll be able to go on another altitude camp again. I'm not really sure if that's going to happen, but to get that done as well would be amazing. And I think just training hard is just what the only thing you can do.
I assume the game plan in terms of race tactics has already been set. You look in the men's distance swimming, and they basically sprint at the start and then sprint at the end as well. And I don't know if that's going to soon be the case for women's distance swimming as well. But have you got your set plan already?
We don't really have a plan. I think I do need to work on the sprint side of things, because that is definitely one of my weaknesses. Just getting stronger in the water will help me with the start of the race, because I always tend to be a back-end swimmer, because I always come back towards the end instead of going out of the start. But I think going out of the start would be a good plan. And I think definitely girls should start doing that, because we're strong. Like, we'll be able to get through the race. Even if we go out fast, we'll be able to hold it, and as well sprint in the end.
Absolutely. Well, Fleur, it's been a lot of fun talking to you on this podcast. We usually finish with some quick-fire questions, so we'll rattle through those before we finish. Okay. So what's your favourite event?
The 200 fly.
Oh.
What? I know.
We've been talking about the wrong topic.
Yeah, well, okay, probably the 15, but then a more fun event, I'd say 200 fly.
Fun event.
To watch or to swim?
Okay.
I think because it's probably the shortest race I do, I find it fun, because it's like more of a sprint for me. But I think the 1500 would be my main event, favorite event.
So 200 fly over 200 free?
Yeah, I can't do 200 free.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Nice. Who is your swimming idol?
Katie Ledecky.
Easiest answer going. Yeah. What's your proudest moment in swimming so far?
Probably getting that British record at Bucks.
What's the hardest set you've ever done?
Oh, I think when I was probably 15, I did 30 400s. And I think that was really hard, just because I was so young and it was just really long.
Wait, 30 400s. How far is that? My maths is off.
12K.
Ow.
Fun. And a question to get to know you a little bit away from the swimming pool. If you were to go on a road trip, there's three spaces in the car. You can take friends, family, celebrities, anyone you want with you. Who would you take?
I think I'll take my dad, because he's good at knowing stuff. And then I'll take my friend Imogen and my friend Liv.
Nice. We always like a wholesome car.
Yeah.
Well, Fleur, thank you so much for coming on to this week's podcast. Best of luck over, well, the winter months, as well as leading into trials as well. I'm sure it's going to be a very fun time for the whole squad. And distance swimming really is in a good place, and I'm excited to see what you and the whole of the Loughborough program do in the summer.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, congratulations on that British record as well, by the way. That was a huge swim. Yeah. And hopefully, fingers crossed, another British record comes your way quite soon in the long course, Paul. That would be something, eh? But yeah, best of luck at trials.
Thank you so much.
Dan, me and you have never been fans of distance swimming when we were swimming in a swimming pool. The meters that Fleur has just talked about on this podcast are something I cannot comprehend. Yet, me and you are huge fans of what's happening in the distance scene. So to hear firsthand from Fleur about the amazing stuff that's going on in that Andy Manley squad at Loughborough is really insightful and really beneficial for everyone leading into British Champs.
I loved her honest approach. Like, she didn't sugarcoat it, saying like distance swimming is, you know, it's fun, it's enjoyable. It's no, it does get hard. It's sometimes quite boring because they've got to do 90, 100K a week, which is, you know, if you're a swimmer, that's not short. That's a long way. And the fact that she has to swim 11 times a week, every morning, pretty much apart from Sunday, it's hard going. It's not easy being a long distance swimmer. And that squad in general, Fleur, Dan, whatever Andy's doing, is just amazing. And I've loved the insight that she's given us for that. And hopefully someone's taken away, well, not just someone, everyone's taking away something from this episode.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to become a world record holder like Dan, or you're bidding to be an Olympian like Fleur is, it's not meant to be a walk in the park. It's not meant to be fun.
No.
Like, at the end of the day, you're going to have to
work.
Dedicate and work for it to some level. The most interesting thing I actually took away from this is she kind of mentioned it in passing, but the way she tapers is that her meterage, it sounds like, still hovers around the 80K mark, because she gets rusty very quickly. And it's something that I've heard about on commentary. When you hear like Andy Jameson, Sharon Davis talking, they say, oh yeah, these distance swimmers, they need to keep training through, they don't like tapers. But to keep it at a level of 80K, and for her to say, oh yeah, if I take a Sunday off, I feel horrible on Monday, like,
yeah,
it almost sounds like an exaggeration to me, but the way she was talking of it's not.
But every swimmer is different, mind you, because I remember Laura Stevens, very similar sort of mindset or sort of like body physiology, where she's almost got to train through.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she performs better when it comes to race day. But then you have the other end of the spectrum, I'm assuming here, because we haven't spoken to him on the podcast, but Ben Proud, he might need a proper 3-week taper, you know, for example. Fleur is not one of those people. She has to almost train up to the day, by the sounds of it. Which is, well, that's how her body works. And hopefully, well, not hopefully, Andy's obviously recognised that, and that's why she's performing as well as she is. And who knows what she's going to do at trials. It's going to be a fascinating race, both the 8 and the 15.
Yeah, we spoke about it on the, like, to finish the podcast, but me and you have that 1500 circled for a very good reason. Like, it is going to be a fascinating swim race battle between Fleur, Amelie Bloxage, Amber Keegan, Leah Crisp. I'm sure one or two, like Lucy Fox, might make her way up to that distance as well. There's a few more coming through as well. But the nomination standard, while it's tough to go to the Olympics, a 16:01.95, and like a year ago we would say, oh, that's too far. It suddenly doesn't feel like too far with the momentum that is happening in women's distance swimming.
I think it's within reach of, if not one, maybe two of them. Maybe even three. I have no idea. So, but if they have the same mentality as Fleur, which I'm going to assume they do, and they push each other on, they're edging like head-to-head the entire way, and it does come down to a last 50 sprint that we're quite accustomed to on the men's side, then who knows what these girls are going to swim. But I honestly, I think it's within reach. I think one of those girls at least is going to hit that time.
That'd be impressive if you your prediction of three comes through. First episode, well, first episode of 2024. Dan's gone nuts.
Wishful thinking, I think. You know, hopeful. But I mean, I'd love all three of them to hit the time. But of course, then only two qualify. That would be heartbreaking for the third person. But
absolutely. Yeah. So I hope everyone who's listened to this podcast has taken away a bit of insight into the leading distance program in this country. And yeah, we can't wait to see what happens at trials, which is now only 3 months away, if not less.
It's gonna come around fast.
It is. So that just about rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. If you have enjoyed it, why not leave a comment on our YouTube channel, review us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and me and Dan will be back in 1 week's time with another swimmer targeting an Olympic place at trials in a few months' time.
Yes, very exciting. Thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.